Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 18. When Florence walked into the kitchen at 6:30 Monday morning, Daisy already had the basket prepared for her. "I think you have been taking too many sweets, so I went to Albers yesterday and bought cheeses and a pound of ham, which Mr. Albers sliced. This will make for good sandwiches and for good milk." "Good milk?" Florence went to the stove and poured herself a cup of coffee. "Is there some process I should know about turning cheese back into liquid?" Daisy shook her head as though she could not begin to fathom the depths of Florence's ignorance. "Good mother's milk, for the baby." "Oh," Florence said, setting down her coffee on the kitchen table and picking up the morning paper so she could pretend to peruse it. "That." "Why does this make you turn red?" Daisy demanded. "It is natural to nurse the baby. It is best for baby." "Maybe your mother didn't think so, but she was wrong. Unrichtig." "I suppose it is the most natural thing to do." Florence was now completely hidden behind the paper, and it is, in fact, what Elise is doing. "This is why I send the cheese," Daisy said, heading to the pantry. "At least she is not so crazy that she won't feed the baby, or herself." "She's not crazy. She's simply, oh, I don't know, strangely demoralized, oddly sad. Eula says that it's not that unusual. The body goes through so much during the 9 months before baby, and it can take a while to get things back on track." "Yes, this is true," Daisy agreed, re-emerging with several tins of tuna fish, which she slipped into the basket. "It can happen with animals, too. I have seen it on the farm when I was growing up. Well, you are a good girl to be such a friend to this woman." Florence folded the paper and put it back on the table. "I'm hardly a girl. I'll be 28 next month." "You are a girl until you get married," Daisy said. "There are no three ways about it."
"There are no two ways about it," Florence corrected. "And you're quite wrong. Unrichtig. In fact, given that I'm your employer and not your charge, I'd recommend you revise your views. They've grown awfully tiresome. Now, please carry the basket to the car while I go get my things." Daisy harrumphed, but said nothing more as Florence stood and left the room. They were like an old married couple, Florence thought, as she made her way to the parlor. Always bickering, but never parting ways. Daisy would never quit. Who on earth would hire her? And Florence would never fire the old woman, despite the fact that Daisy was a sourpuss who couldn't cook. She could bake and she could mend, she could mop, dust, shop, and garden. But preparing an edible dinner, a simple meat and potatoes dish, the task was simply beyond her. Still, the two women had forged an unlikely partnership over the past year, and Florence had come to depend on Daisy's support, even when it came veiled in criticism and jibes. Given Daisy's penchant for burning nearly everything she cooked, it was a good thing Florence wasn't much of an epicurean, she thought, as she made her way down the hall. Even when dining out, she picked at her food. Now, she did have a weak spot for sweets, which is why she had to be careful now that Dorothy's cakes and pies were available 3 days a week at the cafe in Building Number 5. Some days, the temptation felt almost palpable. Thank goodness she'd been fitted for her summer wardrobe back in March. It made resisting desserts a bit easier, knowing that she'd have to have all of her new lovely dresses let out if she put on pounds. "Oh, who cares?" Florence said out loud as she began sorting through a basket of fabric, picking out the prettiest pieces to pack in her satchel. One of her favorite things about spending time with her friends from the Wednesday Bee was that they absolutely delighted in the treats that were served at the meetings, and no one said a word about how fattening they were. No, that wasn't true. Bess often referred to the extra pounds she'd put on since the Bee's beginning, but so what if she had? She was a lovely woman, and more than that, a beloved woman. From the stories that Dorothy told of the late Mr. Wilcox, there could be no doubt that Bill had doted on Bess. What's more, Joe Mayfield was clearly quite smitten. There was a wedding in Bess's future, Florence was sure of it, no matter how much pie Bess ate, and it had to be said that Bess ate a great deal of pie. 5 minutes later, Florence had all she needed for this morning's visit, and 30 minutes after that, she was pulling up to Tom Sewell's farm, her bones somewhat rattled by several miles of bumpy road. She should be used to it by now, she supposed, after 3 weeks of these morning trips. A pillow on her seat might provide a buffer, she thought, and made a note to herself to pack one in the morning. Eula came out of the small cottage to greet her, as she did most days. "Elise was just asking about you. I think that's a good sign that she looks forward to your visits. It's good of you to make the time." "I get up so early these days, I'm glad to have something to do," Florence said as she followed Eula into the house. "And, of course, I'm very happy to help. She's a dear girl." Florence felt pleased by Eula's kind words, though she knew she didn't entirely deserve the praise. A good woman wouldn't have been as reluctant to help as Florence had been. No, a good person would have volunteered to visit Elise as soon as she heard about the girl's condition. The fact of the matter was, it hadn't crossed Florence's mind to drive out to the farm to check on Elise until Eula had asked her to as a favor. Elise didn't have any friends close to her own age, and Eula thought a visit from Florence might cheer her up.
"She likes me and Dorothy well enough, but I think you might provide a bright spot for her," is how Eula put it, and Florence had hesitated a moment before agreeing.
She was just so awfully busy at the moment, what with the cafe and the summer catalog in production. But she supposed she could make time for one visit, bring a bouquet of flowers and something for the baby, have a nice chat, and be done with it. The first visit had been a sad little affair, and Florence wasn't sure what had motivated her to return 2 days later, this time with a picnic basket filled with treats that she and Daisy had baked the night before. Thank goodness that Daisy's baking skills were of a whole different order than her cooking skills. Was it that she felt sorry for Elise? Yes, that was partly it. How terrible to spend 9 uncomfortable, sometimes nearly unbearable months, and then to come out the other side with no love for the child you bore, and no love for life. It was especially striking with someone like Elise, normally so lively and curious, so eager to try new things, learn new skills. To see this young woman holding her baby as though it were a sack of flour broke Florence's heart. But it wasn't just that, Florence knew. Although Elise was a bit younger, 23 to Florence's 27, they were close enough in age to form a natural friendship. Not that they had all that much in common. Elise, who had grown up on a farm in California, was a girl who loved the outdoors and horses and swimming in rivers. Florence had grown up a Grangerfield in Milton Falls, a girl who wore white gloves and attended her first tea at age 6. Elise was married and a mother, and Florence was neither. But they were both young, and neither of them had many close friends their own age. Did Florence have any close friends her own age? She was around young women at the quilting company all day, but she was their employer, not their friend. By the third day she'd come to visit Elise, which was 24 hours after her last visit, Florence knew exactly why she had come. She was lonely. While it must be said that Elise wasn't the most lively of company these days, she did seem to brighten up a bit when Florence entered the room. This wasn't just gratifying, it also made Florence feel like she was doing something important. Necessary, even. So here she was, 3 weeks later, carrying her daily basket of good things to eat into Elise and Matt's tiny house. There was no lack of nutritious, filling fare already in the kitchen. How could it be otherwise with Eula running the show? But the baskets that Florence and Daisy put together offered some variety, not to mention a plethora of treats. Florence believed in the importance of treats sprinkled like little bright spots throughout one's day. Today's treats were of the usual sort: slices of chocolate cake and gingerbread, half a peach pie, some chocolates from French's sweet shop. Florence knew that Elise wouldn't touch most of it. She'd leave the sweets for Matt to enjoy and nibble on the ham and cheese, only because Eula would sit by her side and encourage her. The tuna would most likely go into a casserole for her husband. Still, she seemed to enjoy each morning's display and especially liked seeing what sweets Florence brought from French's. But Florence had brought a different sort of treat with her today. Recalling her own months of despair after Arthur had left her at the altar, she wondered if what had worked for her would work for Elise. Emmeline had come up with a simple plan for getting Florence out of bed. She'd taught her how to quilt. Florence had never been certain why sewing quilt blocks together had made her feel better. Perhaps the repetitive stitching had calmed her mind. Perhaps seeing the quilt slowly take shape before her had been so pleasing that the pleasure slowly overtook her sadness. Whatever the reason, quilting had been the cure Florence had needed. One thing that had surely been part of the cure, all the hours Emmeline had sat next to her, hard at work on her own quilt blocks, softly chatting away about this and that. The damask curtains she was having made for the living room, Margie's wayward kitten, the sunflowers that had always grown this time of year in the field surrounding Emporia back when Emmeline was a girl. The talk soothed Florence, and it reminded her that life went on. Perhaps she needed to get on with things too. Elise knew how to quilt, it was true, but she was a beginner and still had much to learn. The question was, could Florence spark the necessary interest? Carrying her satchel into Elise's bedroom, where the girl was sitting in a rocking chair with baby Jean in her lap, Florence was determined to rekindle the flame, to get Elise excited about something. Anything. "How's our darling baby today?" she trilled as she sat on the bed across from Elise and the baby. On her first few visits, Florence had felt uncomfortable perched upon the bed where Elise and Matt slept. It was so intimate, so private. But by now, she didn't think twice. The bed was neatly made and no one else was in it. Why shouldn't Florence take a seat, especially as there was nowhere else to sit? "Just fine, I think," Elise replied. "Would you like to hold her?" Florence accepted the baby from Elise. It had taken a while before she felt comfortable holding little Jean, but she'd finally gotten the knack of it. Cradle the bottom, support the head. Goodness, I think she's grown an inch overnight. "The doctor came by yesterday afternoon and says she's healthy as a horse," Elise agreed, although her voice carried no enthusiasm or motherly pride. "You grew up riding horses, if I recall correctly," Florence said, rubbing Jean's adorable tiny nose.
Why do you think being healthy as a horse is a good thing? I mean, it can't be a bad thing, but why is it our standard of good health?
Elise thought for a moment. It's an odd thing to say, isn't it? Only a healthy horse, one that's strong and fast and sleek? Well, there's not a more beautiful creature on the planet.
Tell me about some of the horses you rode as a child, Florence encouraged as she began strolling around the bed with the baby. For some reason, I never rode, though many of my friends did. I'm sorry I never took it up.
Oh, I had the nicest horse when I was 9 or 10, Elise began, and Florence knew her conversational gambit had worked. It was almost a game she played. What question would get Elise to talk? Unsurprisingly, questions about her girlhood often incurred the most passionate responses, to the extent that Elise was capable of being passionate about anything at this moment. Still, Florence had noticed an improvement in the last week or so. Not only that, she enjoyed Elise's stories and often responded with stories of her own.
10 minutes into their visit, Eula came and retrieved her granddaughter, who had fallen asleep in Florence's arms.
I'll put her in the basket next to me in the parlor, she said. You two keep talking.
After Eula left with the baby, Florence turned to Elise and said, I brought something today that I hope you'll find interesting. I'm testing out a new pattern for the quilting company. One of my own, actually. It's for women who have just taken up quilting and are in search of more simple block designs. I was hoping you might work on a block and give me your thoughts.
Elise looked doubtful.
I don't know, Florence. You know, I'm just a beginner myself.
Yes, and that's why you're just the woman for the job. I need to know if my instructions are accurate and understandable. Is this truly a beginner's block, or have I made it too complicated? You'd be doing me such a favor if you'd give it a try. I'll work with you.
You could bring in a chair if you don't want to sit on the bed, Elise suggested, after giving the matter some thought and apparently agreeing to Florence's request.
There's just enough room.
So you'll do it, Florence smiled brightly. It really would be so helpful.
Elise nodded.
It might be nice to do something with my hands.
I find it the most relaxing way to spend time, don't you? Especially when you're stitching with a friend, Florence said. I'll go get a chair from the other room. Turn on the lamp, won't you? We don't want to strain our eyes.
Walking up the steps to building number 5, Florence felt in need of a nap. After an hour of piecing, Eula had served Florence and Elise a breakfast of eggs and ham, and in an effort to encourage Elise to eat, Florence had downed her food like a lumberjack. She'd never been so full in her life. She could hear the clatter of machinery from the fourth floor as soon as she stepped inside, as well as the chatter of the girls working in the second floor mailroom. Typewriter keys clicked and clacked as orders were written up and, even better, bills were prepared to go out in the day's mail. Florence ascended the stairs to her office, her longing to nap dissipating in the midst of all this wonderful activity. She stuck her head into Nettie's office, a small room next to her own. Anything I need to know before I go through the day's mail? Nettie gestured toward the wall next to the door, and Florence realized there was a young woman sitting in the chair that normally was occupied by stacks of files and outgoing mail.
So sorry, she said, offering her hand. I didn't realize anyone else was here. How do you do? I'm Florence Grangerfield.
The woman, who it must be said was strikingly pretty, in a pale sort of way, gave Florence a wide-eyed stare before shaking her hand.
Miss Grangerfield, she exclaimed, and started to stand, How extraordinary to meet you.
Please don't stand on my account, Florence said. So, are you here about the new mailroom job?
The woman, suddenly mute, shook her head, and Nettie answered for her.
No, Miss Grangerfield. Miss Weatherford here is going to be Mr. Purefoy's new secretary. He sent her over to get some tips from me. I hope you don't mind my taking the time.
Of course not, Florence declared. She turned to Miss Weatherford.
Though I suppose being Mr. Purefoy's secretary will be much like any other secretarial job you've had.
That's the thing, Miss Weatherford said. I've never been a secretary before. But Arthur, Mr. Purefoy, he's just so kind. You see, Miss Grangerfield, my husband passed away last year and I've got a baby to raise. I'm living with my mother-in-law and she's been awfully nice about it, hasn't said a thing about rent or paying for food, but I know I ought to be contributing. When Mr. Purefoy heard of my plight, he stepped right in to help.
Very interesting, Florence said. And how exactly do you know Arthur, Mr. Purefoy?
Miss, or was it Mrs., Weatherford blushed. I've been attending Mrs. Baker's quilting bee, you see, and one day Mr. Purefoy popped in to say hello. Somehow we got to talking about Greek poetry and...
The woman's cheeks turned an even darker pink.
He wrote me a note to ask if he could do anything to help, and we met for coffee. One thing led to another, and he offered to hire me as his secretary. He said you wouldn't mind if Nettie gave me a few lessons.
I don't mind a bit, Florence assured her. Nettie is the best in the business. Feel free to consult her at any time.
I do type, Miss Weatherford said, sounding as though it had only just occurred to her that she possessed this useful secretarial skill. Though not very fast. But Mr. Purefoy, Arthur, no, Mr. Purefoy says that speed isn't everything. He's a very nice man.
Florence looked at Nettie, who was looking at her, eyebrows raised as if she were asking, what do we think about this? Shaking her head, Florence shrugged as if to say, I have no idea. She turned back to Miss Weatherford. Mr. Purefoy is a very nice man indeed. I suspect you'll enjoy working for him. With that, she left the room and went to her office, where she found the morning mail stacked neatly on her desk. But instead of sitting down to open it, Florence walked over to the window and looked out upon the river. What do we think about this? She thought. But she still didn't know the answer. Was Arthur on the up and up, hiring this attractive young widow to be his secretary? He needed one, this was true. In fact, Florence wasn't sure how he'd managed this last year without someone to type his letters and keep his appointment book. But why hire someone who wasn't actually a secretary? Especially when so many experienced, albeit unemployed, secretaries would have jumped at the opportunity without any need for tutoring from Nettie to get up to snuff. Moreover, when it came to business matters, Arthur was usually so practical, so much about the bottom line. He often chided Florence for being too soft when it came to her employees. What could be softer than hiring an unskilled worker for such an important position? It had been months, Florence realized, since she and Arthur had spent time together, privately, that is. Not since March, if she recalled correctly. They crossed paths frequently enough, but that was different than going out for dinner or even a cup of coffee. Why was that? She supposed the fact of the matter was that she hadn't given Arthur much thought. She had a business to run, and lately, whatever free time she had, she spent baking for Elise and going out to the farm to visit. What did it mean that it had been days since she thought about Arthur? Well, she was thinking about him now. Something was going on. Florence was sure of it. Yet, watching a tugboat chug through the river's brown water, she wasn't sure that she cared. All the same, and this was the strange thing, she knew she didn't like it.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.